AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Resurge, Helena's low-dust humic granule that improves nutrient uptake and plant growth. Energize your soil and elevate your crops with Resurge. Happy day after Thanksgiving. I hope that you are all recovering from yesterday's food fest. And if you're anything like me, you're finding a nice spot in front of the TV to watch what has the promise of a really good Football Friday. But that happens after we talk carbon, sustainability, meat exports, and, yeah, let's talk pollinators.
From the official start of the official Christmas shopping season via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Anna Pavlovic from Agoro, from the Pork Checkoff, Brett Kaysen, Dan Hellstrom, CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, Dr. Justin Welch from Merck Animal Health, and later, Katie Savinelli from Syngenta. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, man, I hope everything is going well for you on this day after Thanksgiving 2021.
Woo. Everything good? Yeah. Nothing like a turkey omelet for breakfast.
Take a deep breath and just try to relax. It's all okay, man.
Is that what it is? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll be all right.
I've got my holiday sweatpants engaged, so everything... Right. Everything's holding together, you know?
Yep. It's a good day for the stretchy pants. No doubt about it. No doubt. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. On this day after Thanksgiving. It's Black Friday. Today's one of the big days that we're going to figure out just how willing the consumer is to spend a bunch of money going through the holiday season. But you know what, Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Based on some of the economic data that we've already received through October, and based on the piles of packages that showed up at the Florey Ranch
yes,
in October and early November, I think a lot of the Christmas shopping is already complete and wrapped up.
Well, and, you know, spoiler alert, if anyone sticks around to the bottom of the hour, rather than, anything else, we're going to be looking at a market that was open for a little while and then not open.
Right.
So we've known holiday trade to sort of be bears win on Thanksgiving, bulls win on Christmas type of a thing, or vice versa.
Vice versa.
And so it'd be interesting to see where trade goes on Monday.
Right.
Once we get back rolling again.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Friday after Thanksgiving does have a reputation of potentially being a little volatile. So we'll have to put some perspective on that when we get back at it on Monday morning. Davis, you know the Yara fertilizer company, right?
I do, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Now, did you know that they are making an entrance into the carbon market?
I did not know that.
Right, right. I was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, and a lot of the content from yesterday and today, not a lot, the content from yesterday and today on AgriTalk came from my trip down to Kansas City. Had an opportunity to talk with several companies. I haven't even mentioned this number yet, but I'm going to go ahead and mention it right now. I did 36 interviews in 5 hours.
36 in 5 hours?
Right, right. Now, some of them were a couple of minutes. Some of them were 10, 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the big reason for doing it is to give myself an opportunity to catch up and get educated on what the companies are really thinking, what is driving some of the decision making at the commodity groups and producer groups. So it was a good effort. It was good to get to gather the information that I did. It got me up to speed on a lot of issues.
So. Well, bro, according to my math, that's 7.2 days worth of tape. Is that, am I looking at that right?
No, I don't think that's quite that much.
Okay.
I don't know how we turn that 4 or 5 hours into 14 hours. I'm having a hard time doing that.
I assumed it was like broadcast professional, like stuff that no one really knows about. I mean, How does radio even work? Nobody knows. It just
that's
does.
Part of the thing. That's part of the mystery of it all, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
That's
yes.
right. That's right. Yeah. When I was down there, carbon, sustainability, those two buzzwords were all over the place. Every mm-hmm. time you turned around, there was another conversation taking place on it. And the reason that I mentioned Yara is because they are making an entrance into the carbon market. And it's as we get into the conversation with Anna Pavlovic from Agaro, it is interesting to hear why Yara is making that entrance into the sustainability market. It's carbon, but it's all it all ties into that sustainability conversation that is taking place. And then the conversation with Dr. Welch from Merck Animal Health has another mm-hmm. sustainability twist.
Yep.
And this one's got a lot to do with making sure that the antibiotics that livestock producers have available to them right now will be available to them and remain effective for them long into the future. And it's all ties back to the sustainability message that the companies and even the commodity groups are so tied into for the year ahead. So the future.
And that kind of goes along with what we've been saying just recently. What we've noted is that we've seen the sustainability and these sorts of things. And you even used the term buzzwords in yep. reference to those carbon markets and all this sort of right. nebulous stuff. It's right. starting to come into focus. It really
is. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely
it is. There is no question about that. No question. And then when I was down there, I met one of the I met somebody that, you know, you're passionate about what you do. I'm passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we could even compete in the same arena as as the pollinator lead for Syngenta. It's absolutely infectious, the attitude that she has about pollinators. And Davis, this we're talking about somebody that is working for a company that is that is making some of the crop protection products that take care of the bugs, right?
That's a flip. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. But boy, Katie Savinelli from Syngenta has a real passion for building up the habitat for the pollinators out there, whether it be monarchs mm-hmm. or bumblebees. I almost, in the conversation with Katie, I almost ended it without getting to some of the bumblebees, and she would not let that conversation end until we had an opportunity to talk about the bumblebees out there. And, you know, one of the reasons that I am willing to have that conversation is because as I look at the concept mm-hmm. of precision conservation, and you've heard me do this before, yep. but as I look at the concept of precision conservation and everybody's got those acres, those 1 or 2 acre patches out there that cost you money mm-hmm. every year to put it in. Mm-hmm. Why not find a conservation program, get rid of the production costs, and put in one of these pollinator plots to help the monarchs, to help. It doesn't have to be the whole field, but you do that, and you are raising the net income of the entire 80-acre field while taking an acre or two out of production. Makes so much sense to me, dude.
A great way to put those acres to work. Yep.
That's right. That's right. All right. But first, we're going to talk about Yara's entry into the carbon market with Anna Pavlovic on AgriTalk.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. This is the day after Thanksgiving 2021. At the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, the conversations were either supply chain, sustainability, or carbon markets and the development of them. And there are some new, very interesting players involved in that carbon market development. Carbon markets, everybody seems to be talking about it. We're talking now with Anna Pavlovic. She is the Managing Director, North America, for Agaro Carbon Alliance. Anna, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Okay, tell me about Agaro. What is it?
So Agaro is an ag carbon-focused company that was started by Yara International, which is one of the big fertilizer players, been around for over 100 years. And it was the brainchild of our CEO to create a more on-farm sustainability and emissions reduction-focused business. So we've been building a team in the U.S. We also are building Europe, Brazil, and India, which is really exciting.
Okay.
So looking out for this to be a global initiative. And we're working to help farmers find better ways to implement these conservation practices and help with financing. So they'll implement the practices, sequester carbon, and we help with monetizing that carbon to help them do it.
Okay. Why is Yara getting into the carbon business?
So Yara had made a lot of sustainability-focused investments on the production side of the house with green ammonia. And there was this question of, what do we do on the field side? What are we looking to do to help the farmers who get our fertilizer, for example, and what do we would do in touch there? So I think this is a huge part. Of course, companies like Yara have a big ownership in making sure that agriculture becomes part of a solution.
Sure.
There's been so much demonizing of the ag community as part of this, emissions piece. And so we feel that we as, part of the ag industry have a huge forward-looking part in making this a piece of the solution. And there's a ton of opportunities. It's really exciting.
Okay. Do you feel like the court's getting a little crowded in this game?
Oh, yeah. And I think as a symptom of that, it's been the last 12 months, major market releases, press releases every week. I think for the farmer and for the, the retailer and the trusted advisor of the farmer, it's been really confusing.
Yeah.
There's been so much information coming out every day, so many sources of that information. One of the biggest focuses that I have for the next 12 months with the team is how do we just help educate, demystify the craziness there. It's not crazy, it's not scary, but it's complicated and it's new.
Yeah.
And I think our job as a player in this is to really get out in the market and help educate. But absolutely, it's been super confusing, I think, for a lot of us.
Okay, so take me 12 months out from right now. You will call what you've done at Agaro a success if what?
So in the U.S., we're looking at millions of acres starting to make the transition into these practices.
Okay.
That looks different for everybody.
Yeah.
Some people start slow. That's great. Some people want to be a little more aggressive and enroll more acres. That's great too. It has to make sense for the farm. But I think millions of acres as part of our program and signing on with Agaro to go through a transition in the next year and then getting our other regions up and running. So Brazil and Europe and India starting to come online. The smallholder piece of this puzzle is huge as well. Totally different than the professional farming world that we work in.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Absolutely critical for global agriculture too. So we have to find those sweet spot pieces, but I see it growing. I mean, we ultimately want to support hundreds of millions of acres globally.
Outstanding. Are you having any trouble finding buyers of the carbon credits?
There has been so much interest you cannot imagine. And I think, when you sort of ask why, everybody gets agriculture. Just like in our bipartisan politics, Agriculture is something that is important in every jurisdiction for everybody's GDP. Everybody gets the story and everybody wants to help ag, right? And again, positioning ag as something that is going to help get us through and something that's critical for our environment and critical for our food system. I mean, it's a dream story in that way, right? So buyers are excited. They want to understand more. It's a new area for them, but they're excited to get in the game and help build this market.
Well, I love what you said about demystifying the carbon market for producers out there, because as you said, there's still confusion is still the number one item out there, I think, in this carbon market. And if you can take the mystery out of it in the next 12 months, I'd call that a win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's an exciting endeavor. The team that we have out in the regions is just awesome and is working every day to try to do that. So lots to come in the next year.
All right. I learned something. Thank you so much, Anna. All right, that is Anna Pavlovic. She is the Managing Director, North American, for Agaro Carbon Alliance.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anna. It's good to learn about some of the new players that are involved in the carbon market. Okay, let's talk some sustainability. And this is a little bit of a twist on it. You might be surprised that it's really one of the top focuses for the pork checkoff.
Sustainability is a hot topic in all of agriculture right now, and the folks at the Pork Checkoff are working hard at it, including Dr. Brett Case, and he's the VP of Sustainability there for the Pork Checkoff. Welcome to AgriTalk, Brett.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. Sustainability means so much. I think we're zeroing in on a definition, aren't we?
We're getting closer, but for pig farmers, I think it starts with profitability. If they're not profitable, they're not sustainable. And so there's got to start with the business case for sure.
Yep. So when you talk to those that think from an environmental perspective about that profitability first, what's their reaction?
Their reaction initially is negative. They're like, well, I want to talk more about carbon and greenhouse gases, and, you know, I want to talk about soil health. And it's my job to tie those things together. And that resiliency piece, fresh water, healthy soils, right, clean air, there's a profitability and a business case piece to that. So then we can land on those shared values. Yeah. But the initial, if I lead with the fiscal part, they have other questions. But the reality is, at the end of the day, we have to be profitable to hand these farms off to the next generation of farmers. That's what true sustainability looks like.
And then when you talk about the environmental side and hog producers' willingness, I would say willingness, to play a role in advancing the sustainability of the industry, the hog producers in general, we've got a positive story to tell, don't we?
Absolutely. Every day is Earth Day on the farm, as I like to say, right? And hey, let's take credit for what we've done. We've reduced our land footprint by 70%+ per pound of pork produced. We've reduced our water footprint by 25% per pound of pork produced since 1960. So let's take credit for what we've done. But then the modern day customer, big retailers and restaurateurs and eaters of our products say, okay, thank you for what you've done, but what are you going to do in the future? And so we need to lean into both of those strategies.
Okay, talk a little bit about what this all means to the consumer out there, because that ultimately, we've got to move that product through the system.
The data shows, and we've done lots of research and spent millions of producers' dollars to understand that modern day pork eater. And all the data says, this is table stakes. Are you taking care of your pigs? Are you taking care of the people that take care of the pigs? Are you taking care of the planet? And a lot of things our producers will tell me and say, but Brett, will they pay more for the product? And the answer is they say they will, but they won't. But the business case is they'll make another choice. The data says if you cannot prove that you have a sustainable protein, they may not pay you more for yours, but they're going to make another selection choice.
Yeah, it's just a question of staying in the game and remaining relevant at this point.
Absolutely, not only domestically, but also internationally, right? And so 30% of our market share is across the globe, and we're seeing our competitors across the globe using sustainability as a competitive advantage. So U.S. pork has to be in the table, we have to be at the game, and we have to prove that we are the best protein of choice across the globe relative to those pork-producing countries we compete with.
Yeah. Pork producers in general, they're are receptive to the whole concept?
Very receptive. We've been doing the sustainability reports on farm,
funded with
checkoff dollars for farmers. We started with two states, Iowa and Minnesota, in March, and we've now grown to 13 states as we approach the Thanksgiving holiday here. So they're leaning into it. They're owning it. Typical pig farmer fashion. Tell me what I'm doing well, but help me get better, Brett. And that's what's fun to work for folks like that.
Fantastic. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to serve pig farmers every day.
Oh, awesome. That is Brett Kaysen, Dr. Brett Kaysen, VP of Sustainability at the Pork Checkoff.
Yeah, some very interesting perspective on what sustainability is from Brett Kaysen. It's so encouraging that he started with profitability for those producing hogs. That's where it's got to start. We've said that from the very beginning on this sustainability conversation. All right, let's talk about how we are adding to the value of those animals. Conversation with Dan Hallstrom, CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update. Markets were closed on Thursday for Thanksgiving. Grain and livestock markets reopened at 8:30 Central Time this morning for an abbreviated trading session. Grain markets close at 12:05 Central Time. Livestock markets close at 12:15 Central Time today. Traders are focused on South American weather. Brazil is off to a strong start to the growing season, though there is some dryness in far southern areas. Argentina's weather has been less favorable, though not overly concerning. The country is expected to get some near-term rains, but moisture needs are increasing with rising temps, and the extended forecast indicates a drier trend through January for both Argentina and far southern Brazil. Wheat traders continue to watch weather in Australia. The heavy late season rains are causing quality concerns with the Australian wheat crop. While there will be plenty of production, more of that crop than normal will be feed quality. That adds to concerns about tight global milling quality supplies. The other focal point for grain and soy traders are the outside markets, including the U.S. dollar, crude oil futures, and the inflationary environment across the world. Focus in the cattle market remains on surging cash cattle prices amid tightening market-ready supplies. Packers raised cash cattle prices again this week in their pursuit of supplies. After buying a lot of cattle the past 4 weeks, there are questions about whether the cash market is due for a pause. The hog market focus is on the falling cash and product prices. Seasonal pressure normally persists into winter, but price action in deferred lean hog futures suggests traders may be expecting an early seasonal low. For Markets Now, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. This day after Thanksgiving, I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
Davis, it was really good to see some people that I've had many conversations, that we have had many conversations with over the past few years. Down at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting meeting. And one of them was Dan Hallstrom.
U.S. Meat Export Federation. Yeah.
There you go. CEO of USMEF. You talk about an excited guy.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, here it is. You know, you'll hear it in the conversation, but to see it and see how excited Dan is about export prospects for U.S. meat, not just beef. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about beef in the upcoming conversation, but it's not just beef. It's pork. It's poultry. It's across the board, and it is dynamic growth. It's the kind of of demand that is driven by economic climbing that economic ladder in countries that we've been waiting to see it happen in a long time.
So you're saying all of the stars in the U.S. meat export galaxy are shining?
They're shining bright. Let's hear about it.
Let's have a conversation with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. He's the CEO there. Dan, it's good to talk with you again.
Chip, likewise.
All right. Let's talk about the year ahead, because we've got a lot of successes that we could talk about in meat exports, but what have you done for us lately? Let's look forward.
Yeah, I think going forward, we're really upbeat about, we're getting COVID in the rearview mirror, and we're still dealing with it in Asia. But as we get into 2022, we see more of an opportunity to get back to the in-person meetings. And, we've got about 100 staff around the world in 19 different regions. And they still have been very interactive in the last year. But some of these events, in-person events, were canceled or postponed. And it looks like they're all coming back with a vengeance. So there's nothing that replaces the in-person events where you can get together, tell the story in person, and get back to where you're having tasting of our product and getting our product in people's mouths. So this is, I think, pretty exciting going forward. Early next year, we have Gulf Food in Dubai, which is full steam ahead. We have FoodX in Japan in March. Just a couple of examples, but this should be good.
Yeah. The growth that we've seen in, volume, but value. My goodness, we're finding importers out there that are still willing to pay, even though we've got a higher price on some of the product.
Yeah, as the inputs go up, the outputs have to as well. And at least so far, the demand has been very resilient. We're not missing a beat. So far, it's being passed along. And I think really, you think about the COVID lockdowns, of course, that directly impacts food service. But the food service sector globally has been very resilient. And we're seeing these online platforms just absolutely boom. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
In Korea and in Japan, we see a lot of ghost kitchens popping up. Now, these are food service that no longer have the in-restaurant dining. So they've adjusted. They've set up their kitchens to provide the products for these online platforms. Mm-hmm. Call them ghost kitchens. And that concept's booming. And as the platforms boom and all the options and all the alternatives that are offered on these platforms boom, they need somewhere to make the product. So who would have thought that, XYZ restaurant that was very popular in Seoul, Korea, really in all essence is closed, and now they're a ghost kitchen? It just shows how resilient the marketplace is.
Okay. I'm gonna ask you for one country that people might not be thinking about, that might not be on their radar, that you think is going to be of growing importance to the U.S. meat exports in the future. Where might that country be?
Well, there's a bunch. Let me give you one region that stands out, Central America. Central American region.
You didn't say Asia.
I could give you Asia one too.
I know you could.
But Central America stands out. You got 6-7 countries there that are all small, but you add them together and they're not so small. And we're already seeing that growth on the pork side, and beef is coming as well. So places like Nicaragua, Guatemala, Panama, that's places you don't think about a lot. And that's a good example where we spent a lot of money over the years and we're starting to see benefit now. And I'll give you another region that you can't forget about, maybe just a little further out front, and that's Africa. Africa, especially on variety meats, is one of our growing areas. And, probably not there yet, but we're seeing some muscle cuts go in for food service. Very expensive by air. And these restaurants where, a ribeye or a sirloin on the plate would cost way more than it does here, and these restaurants are full. So this is how business starts in these emerging regions. So, maybe long after they're tired of me here in this position, when you're talking to the next guy, you will be talking about Africa in the future.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. You when you talked about the quality there, you made me want to come back to China briefly, because they've gotten a taste of corn-fed beef, high quality, high marbled, high flavored beef, and they've developed a taste for it, haven't they?
They really have. And the thing that, so China, we're at China alone, we're going to come in probably around 1.5 or 1.6 billion in sales. It was under $100,000 3 years ago. yeah, it's amazing. But keep in mind, China, you know, it's the largest importer of beef in the world. But it's not high-quality grain-fed beef. It's Indian buffalo meat.
Right.
You can't find a crock pot that is efficient enough to break down Indian buffalo meat and make it tender. So we're really a brand-new segment that they're not used to. They don't have a domestic. They have a Holstein production there, but, you know, dairy production.
Right.
But they really don't have a high-quality grain-fed production segment. So we're a brand-new segment that as they get to taste it more and more, it's going to expand. So it's another great opportunity.
You know, Davis Michelson would kill me if I wouldn't bring this up, but when Robert Lighthizer's counterpart, I believe it was Liu He from China, was negotiating phase one, came to the U.S. and had that steak and was so impressed with it.
Yeah,
it's amazing what one steak can do to developing a market.
Exactly. Once again, getting it in the customer's mouth, right?
Crazy.
But the other thing to remember is that the other thing that makes beef less of a threat is that they don't really have this kind of production in China.
Right.
So we're not competing against their domestic production.
Yep.
Whereas on pork, we do.
Yes.
So, I think on the beef side,
some great opportunity.
Great opportunity, and it'll be exciting to watch what brings in the next few years.
Keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Dan Hallstrom. He is the CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation.
Yeah, like I said, Dan Hallstrom, a CEO from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Very excited. Very excited about what the future holds. Now, in addition, we also talked a lot about sustainability at the NAFB meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And stick with me on this, because this one is a conversation with the folks at Merck Animal Health about reducing antibiotic use to improve our sustainability for the future in the cattle business.
Joining us now, Dr. Justin Welch. He is the Executive Director of U.S. Livestock Technical Services for Merck Animal Health. Dr. Welch, thank you so much for making time.
Yeah, you bet, Chip.
All right. Technology in livestock. We talk about it a lot, but we talk about it more in row crop production. But technology and this particular piece of technology that's designed to make sure that only the animals that are getting treated that need to be treated is fascinating to me. Let's explain what's going on.
Yeah, so what we're talking about, Chip, is our technology called Whisper on Arrival. We've been working on this technology for several years, and we're to the point now where we've got an initial offering. That what it does is, when we look at cattle coming into feed yards, coming into stock for operations, wherever they may be, oftentimes they are not assessed as well, or their risk level is a challenge, and so we don't know what to do. So oftentimes we just give them all antibiotics. What Whisper does is actually allows us to make better decisions up front, preserve our antibiotics, and it's very simply, it goes right behind the right shoulder, 8 to 10 seconds, and it uses an algorithm, and it's not just listening to their lungs. That's part of the proprietary part of it is it listens to multiple things going on within these animals and helps those people that shoot shied make a decision, do I give him antibiotics or not? And what our initial research has found, we can reduce the antibiotic use with the same outcomes, anywhere from 10 to 40% on these cattle, depending on what the risk level is on arrival. And so we do a great thing, right? I mean, that preserves our antibiotics.
Yep.
And also really focuses on the health of the animals that need it at that time.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that everybody understands this is non-invasive. This is exterior.
Just like you and I going to the doctor, they put a stethoscope on you and listen, right? And that's part of the physical exam. And so we're able now to do that on every animal as they come through.
Yeah, so if you've got a healthy animal coming through that's relatively stress-free, why add to the stress? Give them that shot and get them all worked up. Send them out of the chute without all that stress.
Yeah, read that. And you know what? At the same time, save the dollars worth of antibiotics. And so that's, you know, it, honestly, Chip, it's kind of counterintuitive. Why would a company that sells antibiotics build something like this, right? Well, because it's the right thing to do. And we aren't getting a lot of new antibiotics in our pipeline. We know that. And so we have to help our customers, and our customers have asked us for this. They said, help us understand and help us use these products better so we have them for a longer period of time.
That's outstanding. Good stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That is Dr. Justin Welch. He's the Executive Director of U.S. Livestock Technical Services for Merck Animal Health.
Yeah, technology and the creation of these new ways to take care of the animals that we've got out there on the farm, very important. Now, let's take care of some other animals, pollinators out there. You guys, I don't know anybody more passionate about pollinators than our next guest right here on AgriTalk.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Hey, let's talk about some pollinators right now. We've got Katie Savinelli. She is with Syngenta, and she is the stewardship team and pollinator lead for Syngenta. Let's start with that. What does that mean to be the pollinator lead for Syngenta?
Okay, so just let me give you a little bit of background. I am an entomologist by training, so I actually love insects. But I also understand that for farmers, we have to control pests, but at the same time protect the pollinators. And, you know, people think of pollinators just as bees and butterflies, but pollinators could be flies. There's these flies that look like bees. It could be bats. It could even be hummingbirds. And so when we talk about pollinators, it's a pretty broad topic. But let's focus on the bees and the butterflies, okay?
Absolutely. And I do want... We need to understand that this is an important issue on many different levels, and there's so much emotion tied to this story out there. It's not just, as you said, we've got to control the pests that are out there, but there is a huge segment of the population that is very interested in what every farmer is doing out there as it relates to those pollinators, right?
Yes, and you know what? I am actually quite happy that people are interested because I think in the past they weren't. But relative to what farmers are doing and what Syngenta's doing is we've been working on this program called Operation Pollinator. It's been around for at least 20 years, and we work with a number of farmers as well as different conservation groups to really help plant pollinator plantings where the farmers are not farming. So in other words, in potatoes where they have the center pivot irrigation, you have the four corners. And so those four corners can be used for pollinator plantings. And also we know very well that the pesticides are not getting off into those four corners. So the pollinators are protected as well as the potatoes are protected from the pests. So that's really important. And I think everyone needs to know that farmers really do care. But since I've been doing this for a number of years, I'm really thinking more about biodiversity because, you know, we shouldn't be just a single species focus. That may be our flagship species, but we really need to think what other benefits all these habitat plantings have.
Okay. Now, as someone that is passionate about this, which you obviously are, how are we doing? How are we doing with our pollinators?
Well, let's talk about honeybees first. Okay. So honeybees are really, when you think about them, they're managed pollinators. And so the population really depends on the need from different farm organizations. And almonds is one of the world's largest pollinating event. And about 80% of the managed honeybees go to almonds. And we work with a group called Project ABSM that also plants flowers in between the rows so that there's additional food during almond pollination, so they're not just getting one type of food. So they're managed, so the populations are, they're actually doing better, and but they still have a lot of struggles with mites and other insects, and so they have to really, it's no different than farming. You have to manage your pests to have successful bees. Now, when we get into things like bumblebees and other types of bees, this is an area which is, to me, pretty interesting because we know how many species. So there's about 4,000 species in the U.S. A lot of them are in the western part of the U.S. A lot of them are actually in the desert. But the thing we do not understand, but there's a lot of good work going on right now, is we don't know what the population levels are. And so, for instance, you know, there's different organizations that are actually going out and monitoring them. And there's been talk lately in the news about the American bumblebee.
Right.
And even my father, who's 91 years old, bless his heart, he calls me up and says, what's going on? Well, funny enough, I live in North Carolina. They're doing fine in North Carolina, but when you go further north, they're not doing as well. And we don't really understand the reasons why. Is it climate change? Is it, you know, what's happening with their population? Maybe the population wasn't large. So there's a lot of information that we still need to develop. And we don't want to blame the farmers all the time, because that's the first thing.
Right.
It's always the farmers. If we got rid of pesticides, all this would be fine. But I don't believe that. I think we all should start with, how do we plant flowers? And we can all plant flowers. And by doing that, you are increasing bumblebees, honeybees, and everybody else.
Okay. So, working for a chemical company that takes care of the pests, how is Syngenta doing in the battle to keep the pollinator population up?
So as I mentioned, Syngenta is Operation Pollinator, which is our flagship program, and we work with a lot of farmers. We also work on golf courses. We also work with a lot of NGOs. So I work with, these are non-government organizations. So I work, as I mentioned, Project APISTEM, that's mainly in the West. I also work with a group called the Bee and Butterfly Habitat Fund, and they have what they call a seed of legacy. And any of your listeners can get in touch with them, the Bee and Butterfly Habitat Fund, and put in an application, and they'll get free seed. They'll also get information about how to plant that seed, because planting wildflower seed is a little bit different than
planting corn.
And
I know that for a fact.
Right.
I failed more than once.
Right. Well, you need to get in touch with the Bee and Butterfly Habitat Fund, because they will help you establish the plot so you have success. Because once these flowers are established, they'll do fine on their own. They'll do better. You know, they don't need irrigation and fertilization and everything, but the establishment part is the hardest. So Bee and Butterfly Habitat Fund is a group that I've been working with a number of years. I utilize them both for their, you know, the programs that they use, but also helping some of our farmers with their establishment questions.
That's fascinating. Katie, thank you so much for your time. Yes.
I want to talk about one other group I work with.
I love,
my grandfather was a farmer, by the way. He was a citrus farmer in Florida. But we're also working with the Iowa Soybean Association, farmer-led association, and we've been working on two conservation projects. The one I want to focus on is rusty patch bumblebee. Now, rusty patch bumblebee is listed as an endangered species, and we've been working with Iowa Soybean to plant different areas in Iowa that have been, you know, identified as where the rusty patch bumblebee used to be. And so we're also helping establish some of this habitat. But, you know, guess what? We're seeing butterflies in it and others in these plantings as well. So we're trying to do a lot of things on the ground through a lot of different organizations, because I think that's the right way to do it. It's all about collaboration.
I love talking to passionate people. And Katie, you are passionate about the bumblebees and pollinators. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Absolutely. That's Katie Savinelli. She is the stewardship team and pollinator lead for Syngenta.
No question, she is very passionate about supporting the pollinators out there. Katie Savinelli. Wow, she's excited about it. Okay, hey, I'm excited about this afternoon show. Come back at 2:06 Central. Kent Beadle, Kevin Scott, Mac Marshall, and a conversation about the carbon markets right here on AgriTalk.